Hey everyone, it's Jeff Salzenstein, and today I've got an awesome interview with a very, very gifted tennis player, a former ATP touring professional, career high ranking 58 in the world in singles, a top 50 world ranked doubles player on the tour, an All-American at Stanford, a multiple national champion in the junior ranks. He won Kalamazoo 3 times. He won 4 national titles at Stanford. I could go on and on about all of the achievements of this great player and great friend of mine, Paul Goldstein. Welcome to the call, Paul.
Jeff, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. You know, when I think back to, you know, my days playing in college, particularly, and then on the pro tour, you know, there's a couple of individuals that stand out for not only the type of person that they were, but the type of player. And you're certainly, you know, one of my all-time favorites. So it's an honor to have you on the call, and you always give so much. So thanks again. I want to get into this call is going to be about the two-handed backhand, but before we really dig deep on your theories and your ideas and how you created success on the tour, why don't you kind of give the listeners a background about who you are, you know, how you became a great tennis player, maybe a little bit about your upbringing, maybe an early coaching mentor, and someone that really shaped your game style growing up and it ultimately helped you have success in college and in the pros.
Well, sure. Listen, I grew up in Washington, D.C., went to a regular high school, went to regular schools, or I got my tennis in after school, played other sports until I was about 13, had 2 older brothers who were competitive and athletes, and I just sort of wanted to be like them and try to compete with them. So I think that's where I got my competitive spirit from, being the youngest of 3 athletic boys. Felt like it was very important to have a balance of sort of my academics with my social life, with my tennis, as well as early days playing other sports besides tennis. I think, you know, playing baseball and soccer helps with footwork and hand-eye coordination and basketball for my tennis. But in terms of a mentality for how I would approach the game or how I would characterize myself as a tennis player, I think my mentality was I'm 5'0", 100-0, and I'm going to have to outwork my opponent if I'm going to have any opportunity at success. Type of guy who would like to play a 30-40 ball rally on the first point of the match just to let my opponent know that I ain't going anywhere today, and you might beat me, but it's the only way you're going to beat me is if you beat me, because I ain't going to beat myself. So that would be, I think, the mentality I would try to impose on my opponents from the time I was a junior all the way throughout my professional career.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about, because you were 5'0" and you weighed nothing, how did you develop this, you know, your ground strokes, your game style, your coaches, who helped you growing up to realize, listen, you're not going to be a big guy. You're going to have to use your wheels. You're going to have to develop some weapons either on your forehand or your backhand side. You know, since it's a backhand call, maybe how the backhand fit into your game style as a junior growing up.
Sure. So I was very fortunate to meet and hook up from a coaching perspective with a man named Mats Claussen when I was 13 years old. And Mats was at the time 25 years old, just off the tour. He was from Sweden. He had a lot of energy and was really committed to helping me get better. And one of the things that we did was he knew I wasn't going to overpower many of my opponents. So we started a pretty, you know, significant conditioning regime early on. And it's something that, as it turned out, I was really going to need if I was going to play that type of game style. So that was something that I really valued from Mats. In terms of tactics on the court, fortunately, the backhand for me was something that came really natural. I struggled with my serve. I struggled a little bit with my forehand. Those 2 strokes I tinkered with a lot. But my backhand, I never really had to tinker with all that much. One of the first things that Mats worked on with me was my footwork on my backhand. And once I sort of got that down, it just felt like always a really natural stroke for me. And so because of that, because it sort of felt so natural, you know, that backhand cross-court ball, that rally shot, you know, I felt like I should never miss that shot. that was, and it wasn't necessarily like an offensive shot or trying to hit a winner, at times maybe, but for the most part, that neutral ball, high percentage, cross-court backhand to my opponent's, you know, assuming they're a right-hander, to my opponent's backhand, I just felt like I should never miss that shot. That is my money ball, and I don't care whether it's first point of the match or five-all, 30-all, high-pressure situation. I am comfortable hitting that shot all day long, and that fit in very well with the type of with how I felt like I would impose my strengths on my opponent.
Well, especially if, you know, in today's game and when we were growing up, the inside forehand, inside-out forehand became a much more dominant shot, and I can imagine that a lot of guys that normally won a lot of tennis matches playing inside-out to the forward, to the backhand, a righty playing a righty, they probably didn't like seeing that backhand on the other side of the net coming back cross-court one more time. Was that consistent that you felt like, wow, I got an inside-out guy today. This I have no problem with this.
Well, I mean, I did feel like I defended well off of my backhand, but truthfully, I wanted the backhand-to-backhand pattern. That's the one that I really wanted. There were times where I felt like if I got, you know, on a slower surface, maybe on a clay court, maybe a guy gets the ball up on me, where I'd try to be going backhand cross court, but my ball would drift towards the center of the court, and then I felt like I was a little bit more on the defensive when guys had, you know, forehands from the middle of the court able to go either inside in or inside out on me. I would prefer to step up in the court, give myself, create a little bit more angle, and start that backhand-to-backhand pattern. That's where I felt most comfortable. I mean, I did feel like I got a forehand with a big to my backhand. I could defend off that pretty well. And if I'm doing that, maybe I could defend and, you know, push him back, hit the ball at his shoot tops or something and make him hit up, and then I could move forward and try to take advantage and get into the net. But there were times where I definitely felt like that was when I felt like I got in trouble on my backhand, is if I'm intending to go backhand cross court to establish that pattern, but it drifts to the center and guys have forehands to control the point.
So that's a great answer. And you know, let's dig into your backhand a little bit. I know you mentioned that the shot came natural for you, so you probably didn't have to spend a lot of time focusing on technique or improving the shot because it was a natural shot for you. But many of the listeners today that are going to hear this call probably don't have the backhand that you have, or they're aspiring to have a backhand that's more consistent. Were there any stroke thoughts or tips that you had if you ever gotten a little bit of a rut? Did you think about getting outside the ball? Did you get under the ball? Did you use more left hand? Did you need to extend more? Were your arms relaxed? Tell me a little bit about maybe some simple cues that maybe you had if your backhand ever did go off.
Well, let's be clear, I could always improve and always felt like I could get better. I just felt like on my backhand relative to some of my other strokes, I didn't feel like I was tinkering quite as much. And so it always felt like it never got away from being the money shot that I always felt like I could make. It still, you know, had vast rooms for improvement. From a technical standpoint, I think you'll hear me say this about a lot of the shots, but certainly on the back end, it all starts with the feet and getting yourself in the position to try to execute the shot the same way every time as best you can. And for me, it starts with the feet, assuming you're a right-hander here, to get that back leg, which is my left leg, behind the ball, so that my right leg, which is the leg I'm stepping in with, steps into the ball and not across my body. Always back leg behind the ball. Get that back leg behind the ball, and that's the leg you launch off of. That is the leg that you generate power from. Front leg, you can certainly step in with, but I think of a Barry Bonds playing baseball, always kept his weight back to the very last second on that back leg. Same thing with a two-handed backhand. I think that is the most important thing.
Okay, cool. And as terms of the grips go, I was actually talking to Brian Vahaly, and I know you know Brian well. He had a funky grip on his backhand.
He actually almost held it like a golf club, right? He interlocked his fingers. I certainly didn't do that. Brian has one of the best two-handers that the game will ever see. Truly amazing two-handed backhand. I did not interlock my fingers. I know he did. I find that it's really abnormal. But I think one thing that Brian and I would both agree on is that we feel – like our backhands were dominant, left-hand dominant. Our two-hand backhands, even though we're right-handers, were left-hand dominant. I would be surprised if you talked to Brian and he didn't talk about feeling like it was a left-hand dominant stroke.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. I talked to Michael Joyce as well, and you hear it time and time again. You know, practicing lefty forehands, using the left hand more. You know, a lot of players on the tour that have great backhands actually have decent left-handed forehands because they just learn to use that left hand. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because I can't really remember that clearly, but I look at a guy like David Ferrer, and he actually, when he holds the racket, his hands are separated. Were you a little bit separated with your hands, or did you have your hands pretty close together?
I think I was a little bit separated, actually.
If something tells me that I saw that, and I was just curious because, you know, one of the things when I'm teaching a backhand, of course there are principles, you know, that you have to follow to have a decent backhand, but I found that people do hold the racket different ways and still can create positive results. And so I know, you know, when I was mentioning Vahely, no one's ever probably interlaced their hands, and he said he would hold the racket as low as humanly possible. So his bottom hand was barely on the racket. And I somehow vaguely remember that you might have been a little bit choked up or a little bit spread, but I can't remember. But I know you created a lot of success with that backhand.
I think you're first of all, I remember having a conversation with Brian and remembering his bottom hand almost being off the racket as well. I mean, on the one hand, you sort of you hear that and you're like, nobody could ever do that. And the other hand, you're like, that is one of the best two-handers I've ever seen. If he's doing it that way, maybe we should all try it that way. But I do feel like I was a little more choked up and maybe a little bit separated on the, you know, the two hands. Certainly the right hand was an Eastern grip, no question about their continental really grip. But the left hand, it could change a little bit as to what how I was holding the racket. And I actually was not very good at the left-handed forehand. I know people did that all the time. I just felt like I wanted to get my, you know, with the right hand as the guide, the left hand was the one that was really getting extended. That was what was important for me.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there. So let's talk a little bit about your experience on the tour with your backhand. Obviously, you played against some of the best players in the world, and I can think of a couple off the top of my head. I don't want to name any names because I want it to be your answer, of course. But tell me about – let's talk about some of the two-handed backhands on the tour, and I know that I'm not going to be at the top of this list. I'm very clear about that one. But who were some of the guys that you stepped on the court? You knew you had a great backhand. I know you already mentioned Vahely, but who else on the tour where you were playing them and you said, geez, I'm going cross-court here, and I am not going to win this battle today?
Well, Saul, there weren't too many serves I faced that were any better than yours. So just no. Let's start with a couple of the obvious ones. I mean, Andre Agassi had one of the best two-handers of all time. One of the things he did was he'd stick on that baseline. His timing was so impeccable that he would he'd go to backhand to cross-court rally, and he'd just get you further and further off of the court, and he hit the ball so big, so heavy, that he'd sort of dare you to take his big ball, change the direction of the ball, and try to go up the line. If you do it and execute it perfectly, well, by golly, that's just too good. But he's hitting it so big, it's so hard to get around that ball and change the direction. You pretty much feel like you only can go back right to him, and he just gets you wider and wider off the court. And he must have had one match where he had 15 down-the-line winners on me, not because he hit the down-the-line screamer, but because he had gotten me so far off the court on the backhand side that he had created such a wide-open court. He just, you know, sort of steered the ball over down the line. I was nowhere to be found. So he had a phenomenal two-hand backhand. I tell you, he's got a great two-hander. Novak Djokovic, I had a chance to play him a little bit later in my career, and he just crunches that thing, and it's a very, very heavy ball off the two-hander.
How would you say those two backhands? You know, again, this is so unique because the listeners get to hear a player that actually was on the other side of the net of two of the greatest champions of all time, two of the greatest two-handed backhands of all time. you know, how are there, were there differences? Did you feel a different, was it, did one guy have more spin? Did one guy pull the trigger and go down the line more? What did you notice about those two experiences?
Well, I think both of those guys did not often give ground. I always felt like I was 3-4 feet behind the baseline and just hanging on for dear life playing both those guys, and neither one of them would give ground and back up off the baseline too much because they hit it so big. So that's one consistent they consistently made me – one of the things that was the same is they both made me feel that way. Now, they did it a little bit differently. I think Andre made the ball, I felt like, made the ball rotate a little bit more, whereas Novak's sort of gets through the court a little bit straighter than Andre's ball. But both of them just was impeccable timing. I think Novak probably moved a little bit better than Andre. Was able to cover the court a little bit better. But I felt like his ball sort of got through the air and a little bit more straighter. Whereas Andre would make the ball rotate a little bit more and maybe sort of get you off the court using the rotation a little bit more than Novak.
Were there any guys out there besides those two obvious ones that maybe the listeners might not know as well that, you know, really kind of stuck out of guys that, again, had great, great backhands that you faced?
Yeah, I'm gonna throw two out at you. One is Thomas Johansson. Beautiful backhand. There's a guy who you just felt like his right and left arm were working in absolute unison with each other whenever he struck a backhand. Also a ball that got through the court a little bit straighter, not a lot of rotation. But when he was on, man, that was a really beautiful two-handed backhand. Then there was an American named Vince Spadia who had as pretty a backhand as you'll ever see. Again, a guy whose right and left hands really worked in unison with each other. I think if you were to ask Vince, he'd say he was the left hand dominant on the backhand for sure. And then I guess the last one is a name we've already discussed, but Brian Vahely had a beautiful two-handed backhand as well. Could do a lot of different things with it. Wasn't afraid to sort of use the backhand, two-handed backhand cross-court angle ball. Not afraid to pull it up the line. Beautiful backhand lob off the back. Off the two-hander as well. So those are some.
Yeah, you mentioned Johansson. I had the opportunity to practice with him in Canada one year, and it was remarkable because we started warming up, and I felt like I was playing a version of my stepfather, who Johansson's obviously 300 times better than my stepfather, but the reason why is I literally could read the pen or the Wilson on the ball coming at me. There was no spin on his two-hand backhand. And it really, what it drove home for me, because so many coaches always told me that I needed rotation on my backhand, and believe me, it's very important, but it just shows that there are different types of backhands. There are backhands on different surfaces. There are different ways to hit it. And when I saw him hitting knuckleballs at me, laser ball knuckleballs, it actually freed me up to think, hey, you know, I don't always have to spin my backhand. I can actually drive it and almost come under it a little bit. Like, you don't have to always hit topspin. And, of course, you know, if a guy has to hit a passing shot, you might use the angle. If you're on a clay court, you got to rotate it more. But that was a big learning experience for me to see a guy who's a Grand Slam champion have a knuckleball backhand coming at me.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing about both Johansson and Spadia, you know, I said that their arms move in unison with each other. I think a better way of saying it is that when I would get in trouble with my backhand, my front shoulder would dip, and I'd lose a lot of power that way. These guys have the most level shoulders through the swing that you'll ever see. Front shoulder doesn't dip down. Really level shoulders through the hit, and I think that was one of the components that made their backhand so good.
The other thing that stuck out when you mentioned some of these guys is, and I talk about this in my program, is that there are different types of backswings on backhands. And I don't know, again, if your backswing was just self-taught and you had a natural loop, or you took the racket tip up a little bit. But a guy like Johansson was more of a straight back guy. Marcelo Rios was a straight back guy. And then the guy you know pretty well from your neck of the woods, Dennis Kudla, he takes his racket back and the tip of the racket is above the head. So, again, it goes to show that there are different styles and you can create tons of success. What is your feeling on backswings and, and maybe your own backswing or what you noticed about guys, what they were doing on the tour. And if you were coaching, how you would teach kids to hit a backhand, two-handed backhand.
I'd focus more on what the racket is doing at the point of contact. There are a lot of different ways to get the point of contact, but it's what the racket's doing and what your body's doing at point of contact that matters. You're right, there are different ways to do it. Johansson was pretty straight back. I mean, I think you look at Vince Spadia, he had a little bit of a C with his backhand, so he started up pretty high. But I think all these guys, when you see them at the point of contact, if you were to take that, one of those networks, CBS or ESPN, when they have the super slow-mos, and you have, like, you see Nadal hit a backhand with that super slow-mo, his right hand, which would be, equivalent to a right-hander's left hand, is ramrod straight when it makes contact. And then what I mean by that is really extended at contact. And I think that all different backhands you might have at contact, I think that's something that's you're going to see pretty consistent with all the best backhands in the world.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Paul, really appreciate your time today. Always insightful and great information. And I know you've provided a lot of value for the listeners that are going to hear this interview. Thanks again for everything, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thanks, Jeff.